He Said, She Said, or Technically Speaking and Simply Put.
Hello, Tracy.
Hello, Corey. You just did that to irritate me, didn't you?
I know. Today's a good day. Spring is in the air. The clocks are turning forward, so that's a great sign. And I just love this time of year because life is unfolding. It's like the pregnancy of life around us is ready to give birth. It's just an awesome time. I love it.
Well, gee, I couldn't have put it better myself. It's a good way to put it, nonetheless.
So what's cooking, my dear?
What's cooking is black bean carob cookies. Now, this recipe is on my website, and I had a hankering to make some cookies the other day for some friends. Well, I always have a few of them, and you do too. And it's usually the healthiest that we can find in the house. If you're going to eat something that is a treat, make sure that it's not going to harm you. And black beans. This is just a delicious and healthful cookie that's gluten-free, beautiful. And the taste, it's really smooth and silky. Even, as I say, the toughest cookie critic will love this odd yet flavorful combination. And it is an odd and flavorful combination. I'll get to that later. Although the black bean may seem humble, it holds a major secret that they're loaded with protein and fiber. However, not as much as a steak, but there is protein and fiber in this beautiful bean. The skin of the black bean contains a high amount of phytonutrients called anthocyanins, and they're responsible for the deep reds, blues, purples, and magenta colors that are found in blueberries, grapes, acai, and all that we know to be powerful antioxidant-rich foods. Now, how do you say that? Acai?
Yeah, acai, or, you know, you might look at it. You hear different people saying it different ways.
Yeah.
Acai,
yeah,
acai. It's not really an English word, so our interpretation of it is based on how we hear someone say it, right? But I believe it's a South American plant, and of course they use their native tongue and language, and many of them wouldn't even say it like what we understand it to sound like.
Tomato, tomato. You know what I mean? It's all the same.
As long as we know what we're talking about, right?
Exactly. And so cyanins are beneficial to consume as they are known to decrease the risk of heart disease and cancer. They also can aid in prevention of macular disease and generation, which is really good for the eyesight. So let's just get those black beans in, shall we? It's a better alternative than white flour.
Well, anything's a better alternative than that.
Exactly. And the best way to get the beans, the black beans, is to buy them and in the bag, and you have to soak them, and you have to boil them, and then you cook them. And that's the best way to do it. Because if you get your mature black beans soaked, boiled, and cooked with no salt, approximately 1 cup, you're going to get about 15 grams of protein, 41 grams of carbohydrates, and 2 grams of sodium, and only 1 gram of fat. However, now this is all Googled stuff, right? So it changes all up. A canned black bean, okay, pre-cooked and soaked, approximately 1 cup, about 10 grams of protein, 25 grams of carbohydrates, and get this, about 500 milligrams of sodium. So really high in the sodium.
As all canned food tends to be.
Yeah. So, you know, if you want to make this cookie or make anything with beans, any kind of beans, buy the bag and soak them and boil them yourself. But you got to plan ahead, maybe a day or two ahead, that you're going to make this meal or this cookie, right? Because it does take time to, you know, and the more you soak them and the more that you cook them, the less gas that you'll have or you'll have. Or somebody will have.
Well, the gas doesn't bother me. It's you that seems to be really concerned about it.
Well, yeah. Or you can buy that Beano. But they're heart healthy, and they have essential amino acids in them, which also help with inflammation.
Low glycemic index, very low.
Yeah, so that's a good thing as well. So it doesn't spike your insulin. And besides that, they just taste absolutely delicious. So if you don't want to add the tofu, try adding some buckwheat. And buckwheat, as we talked about last time, was gluten-free. And if you don't want to add protein powder, that's fine too. If you don't want to add eggs, you can add more coconut oil. So there's always options. This is kind of like a sort of a little prototype, and you can mix and match it the way that you want to have it. So this recipe is on the website called Black Bean Carob Cookies. I use 2 cups of black beans, some vanilla extract, some firm tofu, some unsweetened applesauce or chopped apples, coconut oil or eggs, unpasteurized honey, palm sugar, unsweetened cocoa powder, 1 cup of chocolate protein powder, some baking soda, some cinnamon, and a whole handful of nuts and seeds, whatever you like and whatever the people you're making them for aren't allergic to, cups of raisins and dried cranberries or blueberries or currants. And the beauty about this one is you want to add some crushed chili peppers that gives that little tang. So with the dark chocolate and the crushed chili peppers, it really tastes delicious. And this makes approximately 3 dozen cookies. So the, like I said, this recipe is on the website, so get to it. And it's a really great alternative to your Oreo cookie.
And remember that a quick reference is just click the blue search engine word at the top right of our website. Pretty much on any page, you'll see it. Just click it and then enter the words and it will come up, you know, black bean cookie or bean. It'll come up and you'll be able to find it very quickly.
I also make a black bean turkey chili. So that's really good. I use black beans because that works with my blood type O. I think that's how I got started on it, because the kidney beans didn't work for me. It just was really uncomfortable. So, you know, you got to find what's comfortable for you and just mix and match your foods up and just see what works for you. What works for you might not work for somebody else. So as we move on and learn about health and wellness, you find out what foods work for you. And just because they taste really good, but then a half an hour later you're suffering, don't do it. Don't do it. Just stop, which is what we're going to get into next.
Well, that seminar I just gave on nutrigenomics and looking at the advent of agriculture about 10,000 years ago and how we got into trouble ever since, but just because we eat certain things as a staple and people everywhere around the planet are doing it doesn't make it right. Just because everyone's doing something doesn't make it right. You have to look at the science, and now with what we know about how food is more of a chemical and a messenger and how it influences epigenetically the responses on the genome, we can start to pinpoint how people need to stay away from certain foods that they've maybe always taken for granted and their parents and grandparents all ate them in ignorance, not knowing that that was the trigger to some of the health problems that they all thought were genetic and just passed on from one person to the next. They didn't realize that the way they were eating was what they were passing on. That's the meme, it's called. That's the tradition of doing what your parents taught you what to do.
Right. Okay, so there you have it. Black bean carob cookies. Yum, yum, yum.
Cool Hand Luke. And these things, by the way, are fluffy, not stuffy. They're very cool and tasty. So who was our last month's special guest?
Last month's special guest was Dr. Tiffany Wright. Now, Dr. Tiffany Wright is known as the LA Skinny Coach. She is internationally recognized as a health and advocate and a weight loss expert. She herself lost 100 pounds about 19 years ago and has helped hundreds of others to do the same. She's also the founder of the Sugar Free Initiative, and she combines her studies of obsessive dieting and compulsive eating disorders along with continuing academic research on how certain foods cause uncontrollable cravings. She's developed the Skinny Coach Solution, which is wonderful. She utilizes whole food diet with a set of coaching methods developed through her studies in behavioral modification and personality motivation. And the number one thing that struck a chord with me is she treats her clients and herself when she was over fat. She treats herself like an alcoholic. What does an alcoholic have to do, Corey?
Abstain from alcohol.
That's right. That's the only way to do it. And you mentioned this in your lecture on Sunday. You said, you know, an alcoholic, you have to stop drinking alcohol. You can't say, oh, well, on the weekend, I'm going to go and have a couple of beer with my friends. It doesn't work that way. You absolutely have to stop eating those foods that are causing your problems, right? If you are over fat, super heavy, but it doesn't bother you, and you don't care about your health, and you're fine by taking a Tylenol and having inflammation and it doesn't bother you, and then just keep doing what you're doing. But if you really are disturbed about your health and the way you look and you've had enough, then you have to have enough, and that's it, right?
Yeah, well, if you appear to not be concerned, then why do you keep bitching? Why are you telling everyone everywhere all the time ad infinitum about how terrible you feel and your woes of life are bringing you down and that it's not your fault?
But you know what, Corey? I have met some people who are quite big and heavy and usually quite jovial. That topic never comes up. We never get into it. They never talk about it. I mean, and you and I are communicators and we discuss and talk about things. But they, you know, I don't know what happens when they're home by themselves and what's going on in their head. But they don't seem to say anything about it. Maybe, I don't know, that's their trip. But if you really want to make a difference, you've got to stop doing the thing that is wrong. And most people just aren't ready, she says. They're just not ready to do it. So they tried everything at this point, so that's when they come to see her, is when they've had enough. That's when she keeps her plan really simple, and it's basically stopping the sugar and the white flour and the whites, stopping the white poison. And she said, how do you stop people from eating the bad foods when there's a trigger, when a trigger happens? And she says that what she does is she sets out a menu and a mantra and a statement. Then you phone her if you're having, oh my gosh, I really want to eat that bag of chips so bad it's calling my name. Well, number one, you don't buy it and you don't keep it in the house as you would an alcoholic. You don't have the alcohol in the house, right? It's pretty simple if you look at it as an analogy.
Yes.
And she's very, very successful. She has a really high success rate. And food is addicting, as we said, like alcohol. You've got to stop drinking alcohol. And in the case of the food, you stop eating the sugar, the flour, the high refined carbohydrate intake. Which is interesting because you asked her about exercise. She doesn't advocate exercise right off the bat. Basically, it's about conquering the food addiction. And once they conquer the food addiction, they start to feel good about themselves, they see progress, then they want to make more changes, and they want to get more active. That's usually what she says. 9 times out of 10, that's what happens. You know, she's had success.
Well, that's her approach. That's her experience. I think what she's doing is teaching people what she did. But a lack of exercise is not going to get you in the prime state for life either. I mean, you might overcome the addiction, so-called. And remember, no one's addicted to broccoli and green beans. It's only the refined crap, junk, modern-day garbage that people have food addiction problems with.
Yeah, Corey, that's what she was saying. She says she was wondering in her life, like when she was over fat, what am I eating? And it's usually at night that she eats, and she was not eating like broccoli and chicken breast, right? It was all the junk food.
Yes, but the problem with this abstinence model is it's going from one extreme to the other. And I challenge the alcohol standard also. Okay, so there are exceptions to all rules. Let's say that a person is allergic to peanuts or strawberries, and they just have to abstain from them the rest of their life. Otherwise, say, let's take it to the extreme, they'll die. They'll have an anaphylactic shock.
And they can't be around anybody, or they can't be around.
Right. But those people are incredibly rare, okay? There's not many of us that are like that. Now, let's think of the abstinence model as it relates to a person. We're talking now about, say, food or alcohol, where there's not a chemical response issue. It's not a genetic issue where if they consume alcohol, they'll die. Or it might be argued that natives, they lack the potential to enzymatically process alcohol because it's not part of their genome, where it might be part of a European or, you know, an East Indian. Okay, so America loves to treat symptoms, and it always treats everything. It just makes money by treating. So what about establishing a normality within yourself? Why do people drink? And what are the reasons why people drink? And there's a lot of people drinking alcohol or doing things that would never, ever get them into trouble unless they took it to the extreme. And that is the part of this abstinence model that I don't like. It allows you to stop without ever discovering inside of yourself what it is that was driving you into this madness of action, this craziness, this insanity. See, abstinence is just a treatment. You just cut it off because it'll come through you in other ways. If you don't release the Kraken in one way, you'll release it in another. Like a lot of alcoholics go on massive sugar bends and they start eating candy, or maybe they smoke their brains out with cigarettes, but they're not drinking anymore, you see? So you really haven't achieved success. You still haven't established within yourself a form of self-management that you say to yourself, you know what? The reason I'm not going to do this is because it's destructive to my mind and body. And I like my mind and body. And also, it's illogical.
Yes, exactly. I had a friend who was an alcoholic, and she quit drinking. And I could not believe how much money she must have made Starbucks millions of dollars. Because she was drinking coffee from the time she woke up till the time she went to bed. Nonstop coffeeaholic. So if it's not one thing, it's another. And then she was eating sugar and all that stuff as well, you know. So it's like, well, I don't know. She was kind of fun when she was drinking, but after that, she just became a real buzzkill.
I think philosophy is the answer. You have to really look at yourself in the mirror and understand what the hell is going on the planet by studying reality and nature and physics and biology, understanding what is going on and what you are. And then you're left with, you either decide to accept things as they are and deal with it and make the best of it, or you don't. And then you bury yourself in any thousands of numbers of ways. It's really easy to bury yourself and hide, especially when the majority of the collective is doing it too. If everyone around you is eating junk, you know, abusing themselves with drugs, and you know, look at the state that people are in. How many people are walking around out there that have their shit together and feel good about themselves and are making progress in life as a human being? How many people are there that are like that? That are in their 50s and 60s, not 20, 50s and 60s.
Yeah, exactly. Nonetheless, she doesn't count calories, which I really liked. She counts the quality, and I guess they go by the weight, but that's a beautiful thing. And she says you can eat potatoes, but it's how much and how you cook the potato. You know, so it sounds like it's a pretty practical diet plan, which I really like. You know, she gets rid of the grains and the sugar. And she does have a cookbook out there. She gets a lot of success with this. It's the most practical way to do it. The part one I think I don't like is Oprah now. I'm really disappointed in her. You can eat as much bread. I can eat bread. I can still eat bread and lose weight. So you know what's going on now. I've had some people come to me and talk to me, and we've even had our own clients at CHI say, my husband said that he can still eat bread. Why are you taking me off bread? But Oprah can eat bread, and she's losing weight. You see, they're missing the point about the whole bread thing, because bread is acidic, right? I just had a client, and I'm working with her in the gym, and she goes, well, what's so bad with bread? And then she's going through menopause right now, and she's having the major menopause problems, and so I'm coaching her on all of this as well. And, you know, I'm saying, well, bread, number one, it's acidic, and it's hard to break down. It's acid in your body, and you need enzymes, and you need minerals to break these foods down. So you've got to leach the minerals from your bones and the enzymes from your internal organs, and then you're depleted. And then you wonder why you have osteoporosis right now, because you're a breadaholic. So you see, there's more to it than just satisfying the bread craving. And this is what people need to learn, and this is what we do. So
I don't think God is watching us, but I think nature, that doesn't have a consciousness, the influence of all of the forces of nature never take a break. So when you're hiding in your bedroom, eating your snacks, and you think that no one is looking, no one above, no one below, no people, no humans are aware of what you're doing, you can't escape Mother Nature. You can't escape the forces of cause and effect. And this is what a man or a woman who's intelligent with a brain comes to terms with. I can pretend to hide, but I can't. And I've got to understand, what are these forces of nature? That's what the CSNA course is about. What are the forces of nature that I have to contend with and accept? And because if you work against nature, man, you are going to lose. You're going
to
lose.
It's too bad, you know, because Father Time will get to you. And it's too bad. I mean, it's not too bad. It's wonderful that people are learning this at 40, 50, 60, 70 years old. You had a lot of old timers in your class, right? A lot of them, like 70 years old, retired, and they're just learning all of this stuff now. And they were just like over the moon about what you spoke about. But this needs to be ingrained in little kids so they have this knowledge throughout their life so they can help their own children. Anyway, thank you very much, Tiffany, for your special guest interview. It was delightful.
No doubt. Now, we've got a bit of time left. So what is your hot topic?
My hot topic is death in life. Oh, my goodness. As you know, your father passed away last week, 76 years old of lung cancer, but that's life. Okay, so that's not really what I wanted to discuss with that, but it does bring a lot of things to the forefront. And it's interesting how death, when someone dies, it brings life to another relationship. Do you know what I'm talking about here? Do you know what I'm saying? How it can nurture another relationship, and it can bring people together because it makes you realize that we're not immortal, right? We ourselves are going to die. So what are we going to do with the rest of our lives? And am I holding a grudge, or I want to build this relationship? And when are we going to do it? Next week, next month, next year? Because you're too busy? Do it now. It's also take time to nurture your relationships by visiting friends and family, even though it's not convenient in your life. Because one day those people are going to be gone. And you're going to say, geesh, I wish I'd went and visited them and taken the time to say hi and found out what's going on with them, if you really do care, right?
Yes. Well, I was raised with this picture of my dad in my head because that's the only picture I had of him. I didn't meet him until I was 16. But until that point, I had this picture of him and my dad at 18. And he was very lean. He looked like athletic. Even Ruby said she couldn't believe how much we look alike. So he's lean. This is the picture I have of him. And then when I meet him, he's enormously fat. And that was really tough for me because I was athletic and I'd learned by then, or at least I knew by then, that that's not an ideal state to be in. And people in that state have got some issues going on that make it difficult for me to understand. And I had to overcome that. And I realized that that's everyone's individual state and it's up to them to fix it and whatever. But what I got out of my father's passing away, I wasn't really emotionally connected to him in maybe the way that I might have been had things been different. So I didn't feel a tremendous sense of loss or heartache or pain, that stuff. I just didn't feel it. It's just, it is what it is. But what I got out as the lesson is that, thank you, Dad, for teaching me how not to live. The way you lived and what I watched, the first step in the scientific method is observation. And I spend a lot of time observing people. I watch them. So anyone in my life who dies, I always think, why did they die? What caused their death? What are the forces in motion that caused their death? Did the person kill themselves? Were they responsible? Did they live in such a way as to sabotage their life? And why? Why did they live that way? You see, that's what I'm thinking in my head because I'm trying to figure out for myself what not to do. By watching people do everything the wrong way, the logic of that would be to do the opposite, right? So well, that's sure. What I got out of that.
Good. Well, see, it brings life. The death
yes.
brings life to
Absolutely.
Others. That's what I mean by that, yeah. You know, it's always sad to see a loved one go or a friend, somebody, they're not there anymore, you know, even though they're not there all the time. I mean, sometimes you pick up a phone and you can talk to them or you can Facebook them or send them an email or you pass them on the street and it's like they're gone. They're not there anymore. So if you really, really, truly care about people and certain people in your life, you have to make time for them and do the things on your bucket list and have no regrets. You don't know what's going to happen from day to day. So just do what you need to do and enjoy. Have fun doing it. Now, here's me, you know, don't stress. But who's the biggest little stress worry wart would be me. But anyway, that's what I got out of it as well. So there is life and death and death and life.
Yeah, they're one and the same thing. That's what I have come to terms with. They're one and the same thing. And as you are released like a kraken into life, you have absolutely no say in your existence. You didn't choose to be born, and your parents, when they come together, or the people responsible for your existence, they didn't actually choose, like in these future movies, you can sort of pinpoint genetically blue eyes, blonde hair, all that. It's random. It's chaos, man. And the variation potential is ginormous. So it's all a bit of a crapshoot. I came out, and then you're kind of set in motion. You have to deal with your situation, the dynamics of who and what your parents were, if you even had any. And some people have it really rough, and others have it too soft, and everything in between. So again, you've got to come to terms with your own existence and what you're going to do with the time that you have. And then you can even understand, how much time do I have? What is the normal life expectancy? what is the lifespan of a human being? See, it all comes down to rationality, science, and relying on reason. And too many people rely on emotion and get caught up in negative emotion, and that's what ultimately brings them down earlier than their prime should carry them to.
Absolutely. So keep busy.
Keep busy, get focused, pick up something you like, and share your value. I just wrote down a new quote from Aristotle. One of the sincerest pleasures of a great mind is to communicate to others all the blessings that it possesses. In other words, he was doing what he enjoyed. That's what made him so great. He was doing what he enjoyed. So find something you enjoy and do it, and then share it with people.
Absolutely. Well, there you have it.
Good stuff. So what's your final word, hon?
My final word is by Anne Bradstreet. If we had no winter, the spring would not be so pleasant. If we did not sometimes taste adversity, prosperity would not be so welcome.